Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Tech Makers, the Ubisoft podcast. I'm David Usher. I'm the founder of Reimagine AI, the artificial intelligence creative studio, and I am the host for this series on LaForge, the innovation hub at Ubisoft. On this episode, we're going to talk about forging the future and characters. And I have some very special guests. Could you guys go around the table and introduce yourselves and what you do?
Yes, I'm Marc-André Carbonneau. I'm a R&D scientist at LaForge. So I do research for speech and sound, whatever that relates to this.
Hey, my name is Raphaël Saint-Pierre, and I work as an engine programmer. I helped Far Cry 6 ship and still doing engine programmer things, which is mostly related to animation and engine, and generally speaking, everything that is not gameplay per se.
Hi, I'm David Coulombe. I'm at Technology Group, which is a team that basically takes what LaForge is doing and industrialize it and make it push it more further with productions and stuff and make it available to everybody.
Hi, my name is Ulva Ferstl, and I'm also an R&D scientist at LaForge Toronto. And my research surrounds animation, so generating animations or editing animations.
Fantastic. Well, it's nice to meet you guys. I wanted to go through some of the general things about LaForge, because that's what we've been talking about. In the first episode, we were really talking about how these two worlds were brought together. And I wanted to know from the scientific point of view, how it is to work with LaForge when you're bringing ideas from science together with a company that really works on product. How is it to bring those two things together, would you say?
We do mostly applied science. So already there's one step that has been done, that we work on concrete science. And I think it's video games are a very nice place to, at least for a lot of application, because we get like this virtual playground where we can test many things that would be too expensive or too dangerous in reality. So this is something that will draw people to do science inside games. And then the imperative of doing products and stuff like this, I mean, the company knows that we're doing research. So oftentimes it doesn't pan out okay because it's research. We don't know how to make it. We don't know if we're going to make it. So it's like, I think in this regard, it's kind of like more relaxing. You don't feel the pressure that you would expect from needing to invent something that will result in a product right away.
Did you find the same thing about the balance between the pressure of innovative ideas and products?
I don't know if I would say that there's less pressure. I think the pressure is different. I think in academia, I felt more the pressure of coming up with something, you know, that is very publishable and that is very kind of cutting edge, versus here I feel the pressure is more like making it as relevant as possible for production. Okay. And coming up with like not just an idea that is kind of novel and kind of falls into some niche in the academic space, but kind of really resonates with production and makes sense.
So really thinking about the applications as well as conceptual.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting. So what was your initial idea that you brought into LaForge? Did the idea change from its birth to its journey through LaForge?
I mean, what brought me to LaForge, like in general, was just my love for video games and like making games. And I don't think I had any preconceived notions of exactly what projects I want to work on. I'm interested in all aspects of animation generally. But then my ideas for what I want to really research was really when I basically already accepted the job and started like playing specifically games to look for what could be improved.
Okay.
So I don't think I had an idea of what I wanted to research before I joined. But then when I joined, I got motivated by what I saw in the game. So I was like, this would be really nice to work on.
So could you explain in more detail about your prototype Choreograph?
Is a method to kind of make it look more natural, how the character moves in the scene when you're steering him through various terrains, etc. And it also reduces the amount of data capture you need to make it look realistic. So let's say you're controlling a character and he should run over, like, I don't know, like a little hill and down a little valley or up some stairs, etc. And all the foot contacts need to be right. Like, you know, you don't want the foot to go through the hill and you want the motion to look realistic. So what you said earlier, that, you know, like if you're playing the character, you don't want it to just like robotically turn, but it should look natural and it should look as if you had mocap somebody in the studio.
And I guess it's a way as well to reuse all the data that we shot, you know, at Ubisoft on the various games that we did mocap and stuff. Yeah. And instead of having to reshoot for all the particular use cases that you really well described, you could, you know, the dream, if I could say, or the idea behind Choreograph is to reuse that data and fulfill those or resolve those use cases, basically. And and for that, there's a very complicated method of predicting the future of movement, which I really cannot explain. But, you know, it allows basically to reuse this data without any problems, you know, and with machine learning and all that. And that's basically what Choreograph achieved, basically.
Yeah. So basically what Choreograph does, it looks for any of the many frames that we've captured of characters walking over various terrain to fit the current constraints. So currently your character should be, you know, at yay and yay foot contact and, you know, in whichever pose he was previously, and you don't have to capture the whole new sequence of this character going over exactly mm-hmm. this terrain, but we have this massive amount of frames where, you know, one of the frames will blend nicely into the constraints that you currently have. So you can basically just blend like from frame to frame, and this exact sequence that you're playing right now is not the sequence that you mocapped, but all of these frames that you're playing have been mocapped, so they all look nice, they're all realistic motion, but you basically recombining them to play at runtime.
And there's something about it that so not only we'll be able to reuse data and not to capture more data that we already have, but we can reuse code as well. We had motion matching engines on previous games as well, but it was very specific code that did what it did, but it was very focused on the game that it should. And Choreograph aims to be more generic and to adapt to whatever game we put it on. So we'll be able to plug motion matching into more games with less effort. And this is a huge gain for production as well.
Oh, very interesting. Are you able to modify the performance?
Yes. So do you mean modify the animation that does output it?
Yeah. Are you able to do modifications on the output?
Yeah.
You
can. Yeah. So you can either tell the model that you want a specific style of animation.
Oh, interesting.
So you want like somebody being very angry or being very happy. But other than that, you can still let an animator afterwards edit the animation like they would edit a mocap animation.
I'm very interested in the specifics. Is the animation that's created programmatic, or is it triggered by tone, emotion, those kind of things? Does that have any influence on?
Yes, exactly. So it's mostly driven by the tone of the voice, the prosodic markers of the voice.
Oh.
So it's not so much the semantics of not so much the linguistics of what you're saying, but it's really how you're saying it. Where is the emphasis? Is there an anger in the voice? So it's taking out these prosodic markers and trying to infer from that what the gesture should look like. So it's more the rhythmic of the gesture that is matched rather than like the shape of the gesture.
Oh, that's very interesting. So are you doing semantic, like measuring the kind of emotion, the level of emotion, and interpolating that into...
Not explicitly. So currently, basically, that's just implicitly the model learns it from the speech.
Okay.
But for sure, you could, you know, add explicitly markers of like, this is this emotion or this is this, you know, semantic meaning. But currently, basically, you just feed the audio and the model through, you know, the, you know, repetition of seeing this audio with this motion learns to associate the,
very cool.
Yeah, the relationship.
So how is that being implemented into production?
Well, yeah, so the idea for us at the technology group is really to collaborate with LaForge, basically, and take what they are investigating, testing, prototyping, and you know, try to build a bridge really between the productions, the ones that are making games, and then with, you know, what they are prototyping at LaForge, you know, so it's basically to really to push further the idea, you know, and to try to put it in the hands of the actual game makers, you know, and iterate with them and work with them and try to really push it forward, basically.
Right, so actually put it into the hands of people that are actually using it. Is it being put in the pipeline right now?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Okay.
Good. It's a process.
And how is that result? How is it working with the actual people putting it into the pipeline? Is it?
It's interesting. It throws up a new kind of like new challenges. Like in academia, when you want to, you know, like have it, like finish the project, you know, it's all about like, you know, making it like as fancy as possible from the academic point of view. And then for production, it's more like it doesn't need to, you know, be like the newest and greatest from like scientific point of view. It just needs to
work.
Yeah. And it doesn't, maybe doesn't need as many features, but it needs to be like really clean animation that is outputted.
It needs to scale as well, I guess. So, you know, you don't need necessarily to cover all the use cases that you have imagined, but then you apply it to a reality of production and that's where it becomes interesting as well. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of, you build upon that basically. Yeah.
But the use case might be smaller, but
yeah.
You want to like really like make that use case like run really nicely. Like,
has it been a discovery process figuring out the change from the like the academic output to the production output? I'm always fascinated by that because I've worked with universities and there is a specific mindset of way of thinking about ideas and paper, you know, publishing and those kind of things that's very different than production.
Yeah, it's for sure different, but
it's been adaptive for you.
But
yeah.
It's really fun, I think, like to. Like, not just think in your own head when you're publishing a paper, you know, like, oh, how do I publish this? But you're just talking to production, like, what do you need? What do you think? And it's like a cool exchange of, like, learning how they work
right.
And they learn how we work.
And do you feel, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of a, in a continuum way, if I could say. Like, in university, you study, you research and stuff. And I feel LaForge is a very good playground, basically, to try to apply, you know, research and everything and try to really test it with reality of production. And then I guess along the way, you go closer to productions and closer to really like the actual need of production. So it's kind of in a continuum, basically. And I feel LaForge is in the middle of all that, you know, and it's very interesting to build bridges basically between the different worlds.
And satisfying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the interesting part. It's the melange of these two streams that don't necessarily communicate or know how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to put that into a pipeline or a roadmap that actually delivers something is very interesting to me. On the text-to-speech side, Marc-André, what are you and Raphael, what are you guys working on?
Right now we're completing the text-to-speech. There's like I've been there for a year and a half.
Okay.
So we did a couple of things. But now we are at a midpoint, but we are arriving somewhere at a destination where we build this text-to-speech solution that is conditionable on expression and that is good enough quality so we can, I'm going to put air quotes, I have to say it, but shippable. Because it was used in games, it was shipped in some games, so like the quality is getting good. And now it's available at Oasis with our friend from the TG and also with our friend from Alice, the studio here.
Okay.
So it's like this big triad collaboration. So this is one of the exciting things that is happening. Maybe more on like the end of one cycle of one project, but yeah.
In text-to-speech, so what is the actual, if you can get more specific about describing what the actual product is?
Text-to-speech, it has been used at least here, and I'm pretty sure across the video game industry, to make temporary files while you develop, when you are iterating on your narrative content, but also when you debug, to have like something that you play. So when you do playable demo, there's some voices there and you can see if your dialogue work or if your game work. We had something that was old school, I would say, concatenative technology that sounded like the idea you have when having a conversation with your GPS from the 90s. So we decided to see if we could do something that was better so that it would be easier for people to iterate on their content, narrative content. So the neural networks, the new generation of neural networks made it much, much higher quality. So we reproduced this as a starter. And then we realized that it would at some point come near like human voice. So we decided to dream of more application, maybe use it in a game, making narrative content iterative in the game, like being like dependent on the player experience and everything. So that unlocks a lot of possibility. But we realized that to do that, we needed much more expressive models. We needed to be able to generate things that are not words, because like most of the time, like the character will laugh, cry, do some pain on nose and stuff like this. So we and this is like the next iteration on the system is making a system that generates all those things, or that you can choose the way speech will be generated.
It's text to speech, but you're taking a data set like of an actor's voice, and then you're building it into. Are you building the voices, and then
the technology we use? It's two model for now. The two model that basically go from text to spectrograms, like an intermediate representation, and then produce a wave file, and we train them ourselves. Because we have our custom voice that we record here. So we've learned in the research process not only how to model things, but how to record. It's not like recording like actual performance. There's a couple of kinks to it.
Yeah.
So we've learned this the hard way and the easy way sometimes. So we do it here, and then we train our own model, and then there's this whole deployment, cloud deployment. So the product itself, what it does is you choose an actor and then you get like a model that will speak like this person. And I guess the expressive part is that we go exemplar based. So you choose a text that you want this character to say, and then you find some example of this person, for now, this person saying this like with something else with an angry voice. And then you say, well, say this new text with this voice, and the model will produce that.
Oh, interesting.
And we went like this because I think one naive approach to these emotion thing. But first, I really hate the word emotion when you talk to because like speech is much more than just emotion. When like I prefer styles. Like at some point, we had to do the voice of an announcer for a game. And an announcer is not an emotion, it's just the way you speak. So there's all these styles, and then there's all these even emotions. There's so many ways to be angry, and at some point it's very difficult to decide on a taxonomy, agree on it, and then have somebody record exactly what you had in mind. So we decide to just let's forget about trying to naming things. Listen to something that is like what you want, and we're going to reproduce this. So that's why we go the exemplar route.
Oh, that's very interesting. So you have a text-to-speech model, and then you can use any other kind of input to basically model on.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. How much data do you guys need? Like, how many hours of speech do you need to recreate a voice?
This we don't know. So we only know that what we do is enough.
Okay.
But right now there's one ongoing, because like we are a team. Like I'm the lucky one who gets to talk, but we are six in my team. And there is one person right now that is trying to figure out how little text, how little recording do I need to get the same level of quality. But then all the difficult questions come out, like how do you measure quality in speech? Like, you can listen to it, but sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And what do you listen for?
Right.
And then once you... So right now we're recording 4 to 6 hours per person with different styles. But the more styles you put, the more data you need, because you want to cover everything.
does the individual need to, the individual actor need to record in different styles of voice? Or are they doing the typical thing you do when you're doing a data collection on a voice actor where they're doing the monotone voice and then you're doing the emotion or the styles afterwards?
The lines are a bit blurred. We do I guess you were referring to the Harvard sentences where you get all the diphones. Like there's one text that doesn't make sense, but you get to cover all diphones in language. So we do this at first. Okay. So this way we get all the phonemes. Diphones are phonemes, like units of speech. So yeah. We get example from all of this, and then we need performances from this person. But okay. Something I didn't explain because I didn't want to go too much in detail, but once we get like the data for one person, we already have like a lot of other persons with a lot of different style, and we train a model that is bad at everyone, not bad but okay-ish at everyone, but not really good, and everything that we learn from the other person we kind of remember it when we do the transfer learning, when we fine tune the new person. So it's difficult to know exactly what we can draw from everyone else and what we need to record. But definitely when we record, we sample every different style that we think are important for video games in our context.
Interesting. Raphael, can you talk about your role?
So in the TTS context, I think that my experience with what is come into play a few years ago. So I was in the Oasis team, and what you guys are doing with text to speech currently at LaForge is really great, because beforehand we had to say somebody is typing text because they're building dialogues, and then they would have to wait minutes or in worst cases. Much longer for the text-to-speech engine to generate something that sounded really dull and robotic. And then it would go into the game, and people, including me, for instance, would play the game. And all we hear are those dispassionate dialogues of robots talking together. And it's really cumbersome. We can't get into a game we're developing if all we hear is two robots talking to each other, and they don't want to do it, but they have to because they're robots. So the fact that you guys are managing to build emotion into the voices and to expand the universe of what can be said during the game with dialogues that are not set into stone, because now everyone wants dynamic dialogues where somebody say something, but this somebody may not be the same somebody for each and every player, because they could have different genders or types or whatever that changes the way they say things. And we could not have that with TTS beforehand, and now it's coming alive. And wherever we are on the process of it, that's what we're doing. And I think it's really helping not only for the final result where we have something that sounds good, but for the process of getting there, where we can experiment with something, hear how it sounds, and then build upon that, either changing directions or going straight with it.
And it's actually moving into production now, is that correct?
Yes, it's available. It's kind of a, let's say, beta alpha phase. But it's built in the Oasis release for Oasis Record. So, cool. Yeah, it's available. It's,
Oasis is really a tool that manages all the scripts and recordings and, you know, localization as well. So the translation of dialogues and everything. So, and as Raphael was mentioning before, the text-to-speech in Oasis was really robotic and not really good. So now with this new iteration, it will help productions, like you were saying, basically to iterate whilst producing as well. So they can see, oh, this is how this scene is going to sound like. It's more realistic than a robot voice that, you know. So now it's going to really help the production teams and eventually as well replace maybe voice actors, right, for some characters maybe. You know, this is something that we could envision. Perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now it's available for one production, I think, for Oasis. They are testing the thing and, you know, like try to iterate basically with Marc-André's team.
Very cool. Right? How have you found the science to product idea? Like, because you've been here, you've been there a long time. Your initial ideas, I guess it's changed a lot. You've done a lot of projects along the way.
Well, a couple, a lot would be...
20?
Yeah, no. Maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 maybe that we finished. But
It's the relationship between the scientist and the enterprise works well. Because we talked a lot, in the podcast before this, we talked a lot about the relationship between these two ideas, really, and the melange of these two ideas coming together and how we smooth out that pipeline.
Yeah, I guess it always, it depends on how you... how you see yourself as an academic. Like, to me, I was just like a engineer that stayed in school longer. Right. So I was ready to come back and do I don't know how to say it politely, actual stuff. So to me, it was natural. Sometimes things don't go the same way. Like in our case, we started by trying to catch up. Like trying to be able to reproduce what Google was doing, and because they still are probably the best in
TTS. Good, yeah.
They are big teams, and so for the first year we were trying to catch up, and then we went to this place where we were like doing good, and then you realize okay, but they are making like assistant, like a personal assistant, and personal assistant never get shot. They are hopefully not that angry. Yeah. So there's a couple of things that then you realize, okay, nobody's going to solve this for us. And in the last 2 years, then we started having to do a bit further than the state of the art. And this is this is what we're doing now. But we started by doing kind of advanced engineering. And now we arrive to a place where, okay, well, this will not be solved for us. So we have to do it ourselves.
Cool. But what would you say is the dream of where you want it to go, what you're building?
Dream of?
Idea, the big dream of where you'd like to take it in the future if there was no physics?
For me, since my passion is around animation, for me, the big dream is having this like big open world game where you can have tons and tons of characters that can just be realistically automatically generated. So having like diverse characters that like move differently, that look differently, that don't, you know, mean that our work hours like grow exponentially because you can't hire that many animators, etc. And like, you know, the user wants to take a hand in where the story goes, so you don't know it all the time, like what kind of character you'll need and how they'll have to react. And basically my dream is having this like big, like realistic open city where characters really look different, they move different, they react differently, and this can all be, you know, generated on the fly. So to make it really feel like you're in a living space.
The autonomous metaverse.
Kind of, yeah. But just, you know, like when you play a video game, sometimes I feel that you don't take the characters on the street necessarily seriously. Like, you know, they don't feel like living, breathing characters to you where you kind of want to respect them. You don't want to run into them and stuff. Like, they don't really feel like a real person, right? Like, I mean, you don't really care if your character kind of, like, you know, not just them when they go past them too closely or whatever, because, you know, we don't really feel like they're a real being. But if we can, like, have them move and look so realistic that, you know...
It makes them part of the story rather than just a prop.
Yeah, exactly. And you really feel like you are a part of the story as well, and not just, like, you know, looking at some abstract image, but you really feel like this is, like, a world.
Very cool. And on your side? The future, the dream?
The dream. I get the dream of trying to rebuild some sort of reality. But to me, I think what I think really cool that in I think would get like more fun for the player is getting tools that makes you think of an idea, of a dialogue, of anything, like an object, and making it very fast for you to put it in a game. It doesn't have to mimic reality. But I really like what happens before, because we often talk about having these walking chat box that you can talk about anything. But when you just go outside and talk to people on the street, if that's what you want to do. You don't need a video game for this. But to me, video games is a vessel to send like art ideas and make something great. And this is not like, it's something that goes beyond reality. So I think everything that we do has tools that help people putting their idea into this 3D thing world is I guess it's what makes it fun. So my dream is to have anything you have in your head, like let's say let's go crazy EEG on your head, it builds a game. Think about it, and it's in 3D.
That's coming for sure. And you guys?
Well, I guess I would say my dream is to make your dream realistic, I guess, you know, because it's a big task. But, you know, like to allow developers basically to use those great tools and integrate them in their workflows like as seamlessly as possible. And I'd say, well, developer for sure, but as well players, you know, like who could generate voices and or different animations or, you know, different behaviors of characters as they see fit basically in the games. So, yeah, that's exciting, basically, really.
Well, my dream is for the immersion to be always better. I want to relate with the character we are putting in the game. And I think that LaForge is really into not only giving us tools to make that happen, but also to give ideas about what could happen. For instance, with Choreograph, we wanted Dani in Far Cry 6 to move around her base while looking like somebody we could be. I want to be Dani walking around. I don't want somebody who's just rotating left and right or moving yet again in a robotic way, because making somebody look human while moving around is hard. But LaForge, they're here to do the hard thing of trying stuff, failing, and then finding out what works. And then they just give us a box, a toolbox, and well, not all we have to do is put it in game and it works, but it's something that's been refined and iterated on for a long time and with many situations. So we know that it can help us move even beyond what we thought would be possible. It's the same with text-to-speech, where we can experiment with dialogues that actually sound natural. It's the same with lip-syncing. I remember that system that LaForge, they discovered how to... there are not that many mouth movements in the world for any language. I think it's between 20 and 30 actual ways the mouth moves. So they found out that, and then they gave us a method to map it to the actual dialogues. And at the moment we integrated it into OS, it got really popular in a moment, because at that moment we wouldn't have somebody to painstakingly identify where each word starts and stops and put the words at the exact time for subtitles and mouth movements. We'd have something do it for us, and then it just works, so we can focus on going even further. So the science is way in front of us, and LaForge brings it way closer to us, so we can discover new universes. It sounds great and beautiful, but it's really the way I see it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, guys, for sharing everything with us today. And I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you all.
Thanks for joining me on Tech Makers, the Ubisoft podcast. Next time, we'll be talking about environments. I'm David Usher, and I'll see you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.